The following is a question and answer session at the end of the Wednesday, May 25th webinar held by the Northeast Regional Planning Body unveiling its draft Northeast Ocean Plan.
A question about data and stakeholders from Brian Alexander. Without a formal mechanism to require stakeholders to keep data up to date or to require parties to use the RPV for ocean planning, what are your strategies for keeping data current and facilitating stakeholders, especially reluctant ones, to use the RPV over the longer term?
Yeah, I think, again, see Chapter 3 for the topic-specific details in that, and Chapter 4 over the long term. This is a really, really important topic. And, again, like I just said, in terms of engaging stakeholders, we also want to work with you on how to make, continue what we've done, which is the type of engagement we've done to get to this point over the past 3 to 4 years is to be working in this feedback loop with industry, with other types of stakeholders that have really important sense of what's going on up there and may have other information sources. So that's going to be an important thing to continue.
Okay. Amanda Yanchuri, Amanda, I hope I said your name right, is asking, will you be providing one-page briefs summarizing the plan and its components for outreach purposes to specific stakeholders throughout the comment period?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question because the plan is long and it's packed with good information, and we are planning on creating one-page summaries, well, one-page summary of the entire plan that we will have, and we'll have copies of the presentation available too. But I think it's going to be also important, and this is something that the states have suggested too, to actually create something that's a little bit more specific to different types of stakeholders that might relate to particular topics, the 10 ocean topics in Chapter 3, that's going to be a really important thing to do to really cut to the chase for certain audiences and talk about how they can be engaged, how this impacts decisions, how the data is going to be maintained, and really what value they see in the plan. So thanks for that question.
Next is a question from Megan Lapp. Mark, stand by. This is probably one that you can feel for us. The National Ocean Policy states that important ecological areas will be identified for conservation. The RPV is identifying important ecological areas, as mentioned today, and members such as Fishery Management Councils will be committed to the RPV plan for making their F&Ps, as given in the example earlier. Does this mean that implementation could mean new closed areas for fisheries in the future?
That's a good question. I'm not certain that it would result in new closed areas. A lot of the information that's been developed through the Habitat Omnibus Amendment would probably be factored into identifying some of these important ecological areas. I think if some information were recognized that the council hasn't already considered, then the council, may opt to look at this additional information. Beyond that, I don't really.
Yeah, Mark, I can follow on if you'd like.
Yeah, just sure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for starting us off. I think, it's really important to state that we're not identifying anything right now in terms of a specific map product. The plan includes the framework that are words on paper, and that's what we want your feedback on what, important ecological areas, how that approach could be pursued. Chapter 3 also discusses some immediate next steps for continuing with that work, including continuing the discussion of what any future identification of IEAs would mean in a management context. That's going to be a really important conversation to have in implementation. So see, that's under the Marine Life and Habitat section. But it's important to say that, again, the RPV doesn't have any authority to close areas. We have the authority to plan and really are creating an information overlay that those groups like the Fishery Management Council, who do have the authority to do fisheries management and create FMPs that they can use as one information source to help with those decisions that they have the authority to make. So this plan does not result in new closed areas. That is absolutely stays under the authority that it belongs with, which is under the Fishery Management Council and Magnuson. So that's an important point, and I appreciate the question, Megan, to be able to clarify that.
All right, next we're going to go to a question that is related to recreation. It's from Melissa Gates. Melissa is asking, it's a comment slash question, recreation and tourism is the single largest contributing sector to New England's ocean economy, with beach going identified via recreational characterization study as the most popular activity among survey respondents. Can you talk a little bit about how this use is addressed in the plan and how the RPB is going to connect the plan and process to ocean recreational users to ensure robust public engagement through implementation and future reviews?
Yeah, thanks, Melissa. Thanks for joining, and thanks for the question. So this is in Chapter 3, and I'll draw your attention to page 99 of the plan, and this is in the recreation section. So first of all, we're really proud to say that the data portal is going to, the data portal contains new information that's never existed about recreation and tourism. And Melissa, you helped with that, as did many others, to understand, scuba diving and sailboat racing and, beachgoers and recreational boaters and whale watching industry. There's a lot in there that's never really been collected before. So we're really excited to have that kind of baseline to build upon going forward and to know who to engage. Just like any other stakeholder, the recreational and tourism sector is a big one. I think, like I said before, we're going to need to work on the how. We're going to need to work with the recreation and tourism industry to figure out how that industry, because it's so diverse, because it includes so many public folks, how are we going to best speak with those sectors in terms of a potential conflict on the water and really inform them and get them involved in any decision that really might have an impact. But again, see the chapter section on recreation in Chapter 3, and then Chapter 4, details on stakeholder engagement, and obviously the data portal, just really exciting, again, for new information that we really want to maintain on that topic. Thanks, Melissa, for the question.
Grover, did you want to respond?
I was going to say, as states, many of the states' coastal programs have policies that can take this information and give it life in terms of protecting those uses. So the plan provides the data to the states to help them do that through the coastal programs, and thus it gives it a little bit more oomph in terms of the implementation aspect of these.
Okay, thank you. Next, I'm going to go to a question from Greg DiDomenico, who's asking, who will conduct the analysis for the Ocean Health Index, and what are the metrics of Ocean Health?
Yeah, great question, Greg. So the RPD will oversee this. That's the first thing I'll say. With public input every step of the way, this is going to be a big effort. And we got to start by determining some goals and metrics that will be incorporated. So this is going to take some work. It's absolutely on the agenda, too, of that EBM work group that I mentioned that includes academics and practitioners and agency folks, et cetera, that are going to help us with this Ocean Health Index piece. I also want to direct you to toward the end of Chapter 4, where we talk a little bit more about the Ocean Health Index, and it's also mentioned as a science and research priority in Chapter 5. So, really good question, Greg, and we're really looking forward to digging in. The plan really just flags the need to do this and to recognize that we're not just here to monitor the use of the plan. We're here to monitor ecosystem health, understanding that there are a lot of other people in that space and that the RPB wants to add value and help coordinate those efforts and not start from scratch and duplicate potentially what others are doing, but really kind of serve as a connective tissue there. So much more to come, and we'll make sure that you are engaged in those conversations.
So Greg has one more question while we are here. I'm going to ask this one next. Will additional regulations be implemented through state and federal entities to comply with and fulfill National Ocean Policy objectives?
Yeah, and thanks for that, Greg. I mean, the executive order states that this is going to be implemented through existing regulations and programs. So the short answer is no. No additional, we don't have the authority to do that. We're operating within our existing authorities, and we're trying to tweak the process that we use to engage the people that need to be part of the conversation and to work better together earlier in the process, and also see Chapter 3 discussion for examples and details of that. But the short answer is no.
All right. Another question that is related to plan implementation. This one is from Matt Gove. Is the more detailed definition of using quotes, in the plan with regard to the commitment for agencies to use the portal in decision-making? Matt, I'm not sure we're understanding the question.
All right, Matt. Try. Hi, Matt. How you doing?
Might need to text us another one.
Well, wait. In regard to commitment for agencies to use the portal in decision-making. Yes, we're using it. I think, you know, the short answer is see Chapter 3, section for description for details. As we go through every single topic, as I walk through in the webinar, the first part of those actions are about how we're going to maintain the information, and the second half is about how we're going to use it. And so it's really specific to each of those topics that dig into the authorities and the agencies and the groups that have the authorities to use the plan very specifically in their day-to-day work. So I'd point you to Chapter 3 for that because it differs topic to topic, but the commitment is consistent.
Next, we have a question from Valerie Nelson, who's asking, how can stakeholders be involved in the development of the science and research agenda? What is the anticipated process and work plan going forward?
Yeah, hey, Valerie, thanks for joining, and thanks for the question from the wonderful city of Gloucester. Let's see. So I'd say we really want comments now on what's in there. So if you can really spend time with Chapter 5 and tell us, it's pretty broad the way it's written, but if you could tell us what's missing, any major topics that are missing, or how you see those playing out, that would be really helpful in terms of the public comment. And as part of the future of our work, there are going to be a lot of opportunities to review and discuss this. Again, this is also on the docket of the EBM work group. All those meetings are open. We really want to have a broader discussion, not just with those folks, but with the public on this. Because, again, as I said at the very beginning, this is an opportunity for the New England community to express their values and the direction that they want to see all of this work going. We want you to weigh in now and continue to be engaged in that. So we don't have specifics about the process and work plan. What we want is comments now, and we're going to figure that out as a next step. But thank you for flagging that.